Session number 12247, Mr. J. Weddle, Reel 14.
Mr. J. Weddle, Reel 14. He took you back to the camp and locked you up. What else? What happened after that?
Well, he went into your room and I says, oh, I'll make myself a pot of tea. So I put the stove on, had a pan, put myself some water and I made myself a pot of tea. Well, a jug, two pots actually. And he come in, the guard. And I said, you want a cup of tea? And he says, well, he seems to apologise. Put his hand up and apologised. As if it's here, let's forget it. I said, ah, let's well, forget it. For I didn't want to go any farther, you know. And I told him he didn't either. He says, in his style, he says he was partly in the wrong for pushing us with his rifle, especially in front of the civilians. He says we'd like it to forget about it if I was willing to. I says, well, I'm willing, definitely. You know, I says, you want a cup of tea? I've made some. You had a pot of tea? And he had to go out and camp with the lads in, lock us up again, and I just sat and had a cup of tea and brought the lads in. Of course, when the lads come back, they wouldn't know why I was in so quick, because normally I was one of the last ones to be picked up. And says, me and the guard had a few words, like. And I told him, like, what he says, he says he shook hands with us and told us to forget about it. He says, well, he'll want any trouble either, will he? I says, well, that's what I think. And so after that, it's quiet and doing. But after that, things are a bit better on the farm. There was no more, they give us a bit extra food. Well, they wanted quietness, they didn't want any trouble either, so I was getting a little bit extra bread. Of course, when you're on the farm, they fed you. You just had to eat in front of the air, had their own food, but if you're on the field, they'll give you more or less the same as what they had. Not at the same amount, but the same kind of, so it was only bread and fatty pork sometimes, half inch thick, used to put sugar on, with salted pork, and they used to put them in that cellar, you know, salted pork, and wow, fatty pork, you know, make you bad. I said, you got a bit salt, sugar, and so I found later on it wasn't the pure sugar, it was sugar what used to get for the bees. It wasn't fit for seal sort of thing, but they used to get it with they gave it to the bees for to give them sugar water, you know. And they said the sugar helped you digest the fat, but was filling. So I was lucky in that way, really. No.
Were you still working from dawn till dusk?
Oh, I won't. The guard used to get you up first before, just as long as it was light. Put you off, and then just before the sunset, he'd walk around and like was more or less just out of sunset when you got back to your camp. You know? Some of the farms one year each other, you know. But still took them with a heart. I know what they get back to the camp, you know.
Where did you go to after this camp?
I was there quite a while there. No, I was there right up to quite a few Christmases there. Yeah.
Oh, you were there for a year or two?
Oh, I was on two or three different farms, of course. Yeah. But that was a good period. Actually, as far as health concerned, oh, no, there was one show I had two lumps on me groin. And, like, two abscesses on that. I reported to the guard. I says, I want to see somebody with these. They two boils, you know. And, I was getting worried. So he took us to 2 or 3 miles along the road to a place called Marion's Eye. Little village, had a big lake there, and that's where Marion Z, and there was a doctor there, Polish doctor, and his assistant, and he asked us, when I waited my turn, and saw Z, and with a guard, of course, and when it was my turn, I went in on my own. The guard wouldn't come in, he just stopped inside, and the doctor examined us. He says, well, abscesses, and she went and he called the guard in, and he told the guard I had to have 26 injections, about four a week, for a full course for these, and so. Every time the guy says, I had to take us along, you know. I didn't go to the farm, I just went to injections. Then he would take us from injections, take us onto the farm. But I had the full course. Mm-hmm. And shifted the never had a boil since. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what the injections were. So it must have been good. Never had an odd boil.
Mm-hmm. Over the time that you're on the farm, obviously the war was progressing and things were getting worse for the Germans.
For the Germans, it was getting at certain times it was bad for us as well. Because when there was escapes, all the farmers had to go out on patrol of a night time. They tightened up on us, kept our Red Cross parcels back. Very restrictive, really, really. And the farmers, now see that them that won the farm, of course, had to go out and patrol all the, they were telling me that, patrol all the main roads for the lads breaking through, you know, in case they broke through. And
this for prisoners breaking out?
Yeah, prisoners breaking out, and they thought there was an invasion sort of thing, you know. And nasty going out patrol all night with our two or twos and whatever, never having to work through the day. Tempers were a bit free. That's it, took us and day this, day that sort of thing, you know. Very slack in that.
Did they get more physically violent towards you?
No, not to me, they didn't. No, I don't think so. None of the lads were physically, and I worked for a few weeks with a bloke, the village policeman. Yeah, brown shorts. The brown shirt. Had that brown shirt. Now Germany was didn't just have soldiers and had Gestapo, SS, and had the police and the brown shirt. No, the brown shirt was in nearly every village. This one, yeah, his foreman, he was a brown shirt. And if the Burgermeister went on checking up the contents of the state farms, he was with them plus the village policeman. So he was there for the political side, and they weren't very friendly with the Gestapo, and the brown shirts were loggerheads most of the time, you know, for his aunt, I stood like. Very strict man, eh, Moj. He soon had to say, "Heel Hitler, ever more." He didn't say, "Good morning, Dad." He had to say, "Heel Hitler," these two sons, short time I was there. But for me, he battled me. He treated me just like a normal soldier. He just told me, he said he would shoot his family if the Russians came, that was it. And I believe he would as well. So he would be, because the Russians came through there.
You'd be there when Alamein went through and so on. What was happening?
After that, because the son, he was the farm, actual farm, on this one farm. He came from Leningrad wounded in the leg, and he had been, and he was telling me, he took me as a, and just another soldier. He just wanted to use farm, and he didn't volunteer, he was just called up. And he wanted to just come back and farm. So as far as he was concerned, I was there. So for I was British, I was a soldier. And he chatted as a friend, but as a soldier, you know. And but he would come and talk to us, because he had been in Italy. He'd been with Rommel's crowd, and he was one of the few that came out of Italy. And because he once says to me, he says, I didn't mind fighting the British. He says, but the Russians, he says, animals, he says. Well, it was an animal life they were leading up there, he says. They were really bad up there, terrible. But he told me, he didn't tell him when his sisters were there, his mother. But I could see the change from the mother and the father to me after this. After he came home and leave, must have said something to them, you know, because I got a bit more food out of them.
Was there any other ways in which the way the war was going was being reflected back on you?
Well, it was natural to get a bit more hope then, and it was then I seen the first four engine bombers coming over Danzig area. So I thought it were Germans, but this Ukrainian lass, she must have seen them. Sometimes she said, the Americana, them. First time I'd ever seen them, a four-engine plane. Well, because we never had much aircraft in France. And most of the planes were German ones, you know. And we've seen the German rockets then as well going up. You know, and we didn't know what they were, but they were going through this guy. Then we've seen these four-engine bombers coming over and batches, and they were over the Danzig area at that particular time. I said, well, either German, they can't be Russian, surely. And she said they were Americana, and the sun was on eve at the time, we were in the field, and he says, American planes.
Were they dropping bombs on him?
No, they just flew over. At that particular time, it had been, they did bomb Danzig. But not, I never seen any bombs dropped. I think they were just flying around some other area, you know, going round. And then from then on, we knew then, we used to watch for lads coming over, especially night time. We used to see there's a bombers moving. We'd hear them coming over at night time. That gave you hope then. Oh, aye. And then we got some new clothing. So that, seems the Red Cross for having an inspection. We got all new clothing. New British Army boots, British Army top coat, Glengarry, so we could put them over our ears. But they looked, they had getting some muffles off the farmer. They had them covered up with bits of wire on there for your ears for the winter time. But if you didn't wear them, you got frostbite in your ears, because the winters were really severe there. Myself, I was more full of hope then, like, where they knew they were taking a bashing. And I was ready that lads would come over and drop these aluminium foils, you know, on the fields, so they couldn't get there for radar. And they thought they were poisoned. When I told the village, said they were poisoned in the field. I said, the British wouldn't be poisoned. I said, something they were playing them. And I picked one up in the field. I says, poison? No, I was annoyed at seeing me putting poison. I put me mouth. Just to prove it wasn't poison. I didn't like people knocking with. For all of us, all them years, nobody knocked Britain when I was there. That's one thing you never did, knock Britain when you were in another country. As a poor Britain that does that, I'll tell you. And I never give up hope. Never once did I give up hope. I mean, I give up hope not getting home, but never hope losing. Never.
And when did you leave this particular camp?
45.
And by then, was it was food getting bad? Was there signs that things were really getting rough?
Oh, aye.
Of course, the Russians would be approaching.
They were knocking at the door, like, but it wasn't too bad, actually, then, because the Christmases, mate, I will say this, the Christmases there in the farm district, in that district, were something I've never seen Christmases like them. I will say that. I mean, I know we're fighting the war with the Germans, and some lads had it rough, but that might have been one of the lucky ones, I don't know. But the Christmases, yeah, something.
In what way?
I was fortunate. Well, the German guards always celebrated the Christmas. I always had a canny drink and singing all Christmas Eve, the songs and that, you know, and being on a farm there at the Christmas Eve, weren't busy, period. But there they do all the repair work. The women are making a own wool and dyed, and they're killing the geese and everything, you know. Still a lot of work to do. Hand feeding the cattle all water, still had to be fed by hauling it from the pond, you know. And I seen them putting the Christmas tree up. And they were telling us about the Christmases. They started singing around the Christmas tree, ringing their little bells, you know. But the families always come to the grandmother's, or the mother's house. And now the Christmas is there, and they had their plan. Sometimes they went down for nearly, like, took the New Year, the party.
Did you not get involved in this?
No, I got a bit extra food, like, because the bakehouse, when the Christmas time, the bakehouse is outside, and they had a big stone, brick buildings, and some had them covered. The farm I was on, it was covered. And covered in some out in a field. And you're pouring them with wood and branches up the trees and to get a temperature like you do in ordinary, well, one of those we used to do with our ovens, and temperature before they put their bread in, and they do it and once bake and at once, you know, loaves of bread, to put them in the old pad, wooden pallets. And that was the man's job, getting a fire. The oven bought the farmer and filled it with timber, and timber's all cut, because when you're doing that, you're always cutting timber for the winter time. And some of that got me to help to get the fire going, and then putting all the brushwood in, you know, getting the sort of temperature, and you had to clean it out, and you put the flour in, like my mother and them used to, and they put the bread in, and put a bit more heat in, push it out into the gear, and try to be clean. And when it was ready, they bring the big trough of bread out, and crisp time they made cakes, little cakes. And of course, they'd done after the bread was out, then they'd put the cakes in, you know. And that was giving me some.
So you got Christmas some of this time. At Christmas?
Oh, aye, and they'd give them, made all the homemade sausages and. It was all jarred and pickled stuff, liver sausage. And I was, at Christmas time, I always got a bit lumpy liver sausage, take back the camp, and a few apples. And when they did the baking, they always had that, cut that fruit up, and put it in the oven, and dried them. And used to have dried fruit with that. Skim milk, you know, and used to give us some of them at the Christmas time. A couple of Christmases I was there, of course. And, so it was always some hope anyway. But otherwise, it was just primitive. We didn't get a bath there. We had to bathe in a bucket of water, put it on the stove, get it heated up, and just wash ourselves, stand on a pail of water. And the only time we got a bath is if in the summertime, The guard was in, wanted to swim as well. He took me for a swim in the lake, about 3 miles away, on the borders of Poland and Danzig face there. And to go there, just a few yards out, because there was a big shelf, and it was too cold. Actually, it was dangerous to go in, really. But on the shelf was just nice to get a lie in and get a nice wash down, you know. Was not the only time we got a bath, as such. And the toilets, I say, were primitive. Just at least a little bit privacy in the toilet. It was one man. Otherwise, it was I was in a big deep pool in there.
Did any men try to escape from?
There was one escape from there. In that camp, 44. Now from Dorset, reservist. But he got—he was on the state farm. It seems he had gotten his Red Cross parcels and hid them for what he wanted. He knew his maps. He had a bit of a map made for information he'd received, you know, from different people. And real farm lad. He knew the countryside and reservist. He made a break for it. He only told a couple of lads in his camp, the state farm, and they had covered for him. When the guard was doing the roll call, had covered up for him somehow, don't know how, he never said, but he got a good 24-hour start. And we never heard no more of him till later on. Because I took ill on December 40. It was either November or December. I took an infection of the scalp. This Polish doctor couldn't, he thought it was infectious, so he sent us back to Danzig, Stolzenburg. Danzig was on top of a hill. That was a big camp. He used to do jobs in Danzig and them places, and it was also a hospital camp for the camps in that area. There was a Captain Ross was in charge of the hospital there. They had British military personnel there in the camp itself. Bunks, nice huts, and it was a big camp, that.
Was that where the sick prisoners were sent to?
There was working prisoners in there, but they had a hospital there. There was quite a few in. It was a crowded camp then, because that was in December. There was a lot of lads coming to the camp then.
Which year was this? 44?
44, aye. Some of the lads were working in the hospital in Danzig, and they were bringing the rumours back that Oliver Dean was burning the limbs off amputated German soldiers in Danzig. And things were getting a bit rough, all I got was, he said it wasn't an infection, but I was put in an infection part, that had an infection part of the hospital, you know. So when I first seen some of the lads, there were 10 lads in there, they're all there. I was amazed, actually, at gonorrhea and 2 had pox.
Where they got that from then?
According to them, when they were German lessons. Different camp. And most of them were married men. I was amazed, but one lad had just come in, and it seemed I didn't know where the doctor was getting them from or why. But it seems when I had a roll call, they all had to go in with the rest of the lads. And just check, but after the roll call, went back to the hospital again. And as far as I understand, Captain Russell was getting injections from Britain. It must have been from Britain or somewhere. because you give one to one lad, and reckon it was a new drug. He was in a bad condition. He told me I'm bad. The school cup was rattling. They showed all night. The time was there, but he got over it. Like, but something went in a bad way. And post then the lads were starting to come in. Into Danzig from the outskirts who are coming in. Dribbles and drabbles, you know. It was getting a bit crowded. So I never did get back to my original camp with the lads. No, I did get back to there.
So you stayed here, did you?
I stayed in Danzig. We had Christmas there. They put a concert on. In fact, that things were organised. The camp used to play the bagpipes with a drummer, and the lads had a bit of a band. And this big canteen hut used to make a bit of a dog tack, or a horse race, and tack, you know, and have betting on them. Well, they're little models, you know, and the bookies making bets, you know, and things like that to put a nice entertainment on. And then they put a concert on at the Christmas time amongst ourselves and so with it. And I had a Red Cross parcel. Well, no, it wasn't too bad. The toilets was better there. Yeah, they had the proper toilets, you know. And the lads had stoves, little ovens on the stoves. Them had been there for a long time and made ourselves ovens. And so they could make ourselves a bit of a meal when they got Red Cross parcel there. But that's when the Russians made their big push after the end of January then, mate. So after that, it... I was soon had to get out. I wonder whether it was bad. Really frosty. The winters there are really terrible, you know. You had to use horse and sledges there for about 2 months of the year.
Did the Germans at all, the guards particularly?
Oh, the guards tightened up as well. Oh, you had to be careful. Any tempers got a bit frayed, they weren't long and bring their rifles up, you know. There's no messing about, like.
Were they young men or were they older men?
Oh, the older men, because... you remember you were there, I mean, the Germans there were calling the kids up then, you know, 16 and 15 to send them into France, you know. You know, some had to get out and they dished what parcels they had. I think we got two of them, man. And we got to take everything with you. I mean, you wanted and all. But some of the lads from out landing camps were in a bad way because you had to work all day in the frozen snow and everything. In a bad way, that's the start of the war.
They were, in effect, bringing prisoners into Danzig to
Danzig from there, keeping them all together. They were just sleeping on the floor anywhere. And that's where I met my mates from there. From Stripo, they marched all the way from Stripo to Danzig, which is a canny hike. And there they were in a bad way. Their legs were muscle bone with the cool and everything. And...
were you worried at this time of what might happen to you?
Oh, aye. We were worried, aye. Because...
was any rumours?
At least when you were, they were getting... the Warlords were getting up a hand and the Russians were knocking at the door. But I don't think there was a man there wanting to be called by the Russians, actually. Because there was quite a few rumours going around. They were killing everything in front of them. You know, and these lads are brought in the rush from the outland. Landing areas, you know, and Danzig.
Even the prisoners felt that the Russians might shoot.
Ah, I did. Oh, I with the rumours, oh, I. Because with the Germans had threatened the Russian prisoners and women, anything could happen when they come in, you know, and were proved right in certain cases. And then we were told to move. We got to Red Cross parcel everything together. But, and it started out in there. Cool and bitter, oh, there was a storm.
And what clothing, what was your clothing situation just as you were starting?
Well, luckily, I'd had the new British Army uniform. I had British Army boots for hobnails in. And I'd also had some leather from home, two lovely soles of leather. And I'd get me a pair of wool boots. That before I went to Danzig, sold. Mm-hmm. They don't know wooden pegs, they now don't use nails, I guess. and had them sold, and he put some studs in. And my father sent some studs with a leather. And the German had, cobbler, the village cobbler had put the studs in. One or two had two canny pair of boots to start the march with.
And you had the...
Plus I had the British Army top coat and my British Army uniform and the balaclava, which I'd also had a pair of wooden mitts made for us at Christmas time by the German girl. She made them with her a brother, and made a pair for me. So I was lucky there.
And had your socks.
And I had a pair of grey socks from home, and plus the flannelettes. But the march in 1940, we never forgot that. So that was a godsend for us. We knew what to expect, only the weather was different. So it was that when that march.
Did they give you any warning? Did they tell you that you were going to march?
Just a few hours. Just a few hours, we're moving away from Danzig.